Chapter 3 Pandora and Hermes. Pandora is made from earth, shaped by the hands of Hephaestus and made in the image of his beloved wife. Aphrodite gifts her with grace and charisma. Athena teaches her to weave and bestows cleverness upon her. She stands in front of Hermes, and the god frowns and touches her with a single fingertip on her chin, moving her head one way, then the other. "They'll eat you alive," he says, and she doesn't understand. She tilts her head to the side and smiles a vacant smile. All of the cleverness in the world will do her no good without any context. "We are the same," she says, pressing a hand to Hermes' chest. She's made from earth and has skin to match. He is a celestial god, and his skin is the same rich shade of brown. He did not ask to be born any more than his mother asked to bear him. His creation, just like hers, is at the whims of Zeus. All for some lost fire, all because Prometheus wanted his people to be warm and... well, he is the god of thieves, after all. So he gifts her with deceit, with selfishness, with cunning. Her smile leaves her face all at once as she's filled with self-awareness. "He'll be angry with you," she says. "I am not what you were supposed to make." "Gods have short memories," he says, and doesn't bother to hide the contempt in his voice. "Don't worry about me, gifted child. You have larger problems than my fate." He has turned her from something pure into something more like him. Her face darkens even further as her perfectly crafted mind slots all the pieces together, and he can't help but find her lovely. It's how she was made, after all. "I can't stop it, can I? Whatever they're planning for me to do." "No," Hermes says. "But now you might be able to survive it." "Will I want to?" she asks, and he doesn't answer. She doesn't expect him to. She hides from everyone, lives in a cave at the edge of the city. The gods had called her the first woman, but that's not true. She can see. There are women. They smile and laugh and have work-roughened hands. She aches to join them, but she has the beauty of a goddess. They will know. If she joins them, they will know she is not of them, and it will set into motion whatever trap Zeus has planned. She is not human, not in the same way. Molded from clay by a god's hands. But she is of humans, and not eager to bestow upon them the harm she's destined to bring them. She bathes in streams where only nymphs reside, steals into the city in the cloak of night, and pilfers from the baker's trash.
"When they said they sent my brother a wife," a low, amused voice says, too close behind her one night, "I hadn't expected a beggar."
She whirls around, hard bread clenched tight in front of her, an incredibly inefficient shield. Her breath catches in her throat when she sees him. Dark and tall and eyes like the night sky. He looks like Hermes. Like her. "Who are you?" she demands. They're in an alley corner, and of her gifts, flight is not among them. She'll have to fight him to get away. She's not afraid of him. Maybe another mortal would be, cornered in the middle of the night by a man she doesn't know. But she's no normal mortal woman. And besides, he has something comforting about him, like the hearth fire attended by Hestia. Something warm.
"I am Prometheus," says the man,
and no wonder he reminds her of fire.
"What do they call you?"
You are meant to be in the deepest pits of Hades' realm, she snaps, and shifts her grip on the stale bread so that she can throw it at him. He's the whole reason she's here to begin with, him and his thievery. He shrugs and walks closer to her, watching her like one would watch a wild animal. Good. Here, in this dark alley where no one would find a cooling body until morning, it is he that should be afraid.
Gods forget, he says, and Hades has grown cold in his place beneath the earth.
She pauses, considers. You stole fire for Hades.
No, he corrects. I stole fire for the people. But Hades benefited as well, enough that he was willing to forget the terms of my punishment.
What do you want? She asks for the second time. Why are you here? He stops, too close to her.
The question is, why are you here?
She steps into his space now, following him as he backs away from her. I am here because of you, Fire Stealer, because gods may forget, but they do not forgive, and I am the punishment they have unleashed upon the world.
What a punishment you are, he says, looking at her lips,
and she forgets to hate him only long enough to kiss him. Hermes watches her, watches them. He doesn't know Zeus's plan, if this is part of it or not, but he watches her and he worries. He thinks it is. He can see Aphrodite's magic clinging to Pandora, but he doesn't know why. He would go to his mother, but she's always difficult to find. Gaia preferring to live in streams and rivers rather than face the man she bore a son for. But his mother's father, on the other hand, is always in the same place. Grandfather, Hermes greets, touching lightly down onto the earth. How are you?
How am I always, boy?
Atlas grunts out, legs and arms straining as he holds up the sky above the earth.
Tired.
Hermes' lips quirk up at the corners. Some days he thinks he's more Atlas's grandson than he's Zeus's son. I need some advice, grandfather. Atlas raises an eyebrow.
I'm listening.
So Hermes tells him everything, from beginning to end, because he can't figure out what his father's plan is. But Atlas might. He's known the man for longer, at least. Atlas nods, slow, and says,
A bride of gods, a gifted child. I can think of only one reason to create such a child.
Hermes waits. Atlas sighs and says,
There is a jar within Olympus that becomes sealed when it leaves the realm of the gods. After that, only a being neither mortal nor celestial may open it.
What are they planning to put inside? Hermes demands, heart spiking. What are they planning to unleash upon the unsuspecting earth? His grandfather smirks.
It doesn't matter. What matters is this. What are you going to put inside?
Prometheus goes by Epimetheus, masquerading as his own brother. We shouldn't do this, Pandora says, even as she steps inside his home. Even as he slides off her dress, his hands are covered with shiny burn scars, and she wonders if he holds that fire still. Every place he touches her is white hot. Every bit of skin that touches his skin feels branded. She should run. That would be the smart thing to do. And thanks to Hermes, she's a smart woman. but she was made for him. She knows that now. Made to complete him, and she feels a pull to him that she can't deny. She's a smart woman, and she should run. She completes him, but he won't complete her because she doesn't have any missing pieces for him to fill.
You were meant to be my wife, he reminds her,
greedy eyes and greedy hands roaming over her. And this is why Hephaestus sculpted her, why Aphrodite taught her. Prometheus is not a foolish man. He should know better than to trust her, than to believe she is a gift that comes freely. But he is still a man, and she has the beauty of a goddess, and he will not turn her away, and she can't bring herself to make him. He is soft and hard and wonderful, and Pandora curses both of them for their selfishness, even as she pulls him closer. Hermes goes to Nyx, to the young woman hiding behind the skirts of the goddess of darkness, and says, "Please, I need her."
"She's my daughter,"
Nyx says, arms spread as she plants herself firmly in front of him, eyes wide and pleading. "I need her." Nyx can't stop him and knows it. But Hermes only smiles before flying away. That night, he steals her away, and Elpis clutches his shoulders but doesn't scream or cry. Holding her feels like sunlight, like the wind on his face when he's flying, and she's exactly what he needs. "I'm sorry," he says, because he's the god of thieves, but she isn't something he wanted to have to steal. She's not quite a child, and not quite grown, has skin and hair the color of honey. "It's okay," she says, voice older than the rest of her. "Mother was being selfish. I have important work to do." He blinks, opens his mouth, then closes it.
"You know what I need you to do?"
"No," she says. "But I know what I am. That is enough." They have a wedding. Pandora tries to talk him out of it, tries to say that it doesn't matter what people say, what they do, that it doesn't matter how many men come asking for her. She is his and his alone. Prometheus will not listen, insists that she is his love and life and that she deserves the title of wife. She'd be flattered if she wasn't furious. He loves her, but he does not listen to her, and it grates. It's a lovely wedding. She's the most beautiful bride because she is the most beautiful woman. And Prometheus looks at her like she is the fire he once stole. It worries her, because that fire burned him, and she doesn't want to burn him. It worries her because she's not a fire. She's a woman, his now wife. Some days she asks herself what she's doing here with this man. She loves him, she thinks, and he loves her, she thinks. But it never feels completely right. They receive many gifts. The oddest is a large marble jar rimmed in gold. Prometheus tries to open it and fails, muscles straining and fingers slipping. "Here," he says, frustrated, and shoves the jar into her hands. She sighs. "If you cannot open it, I don't know why you'd expect me to be able to," she scolds. But to her surprise, the lid comes off at her lightest touch. Her surprise turns to horror. Ugly, terrible things leap from the jar. Monstrous, horrifying things move past and around her and leap to infect everyone and everything they can find. It's too late. She knows she's too late, but she slams the lid back onto the jar.
Something knocks against it, straining to get out. But whatever thing was at the bottom of the jar remains there still. She turns to her husband, cold and afraid and wishing for the fire that he always seems to carry. Prometheus is thin and weak, and blood drips out of the corners of his mouth. Disease has ravaged him, and as a being crafted by godly hands, she is safe from the horrors of the jar, but he is not. He lifts a hand, reaching for her. She leaps towards him, but she's too late. He's dead, and his body hits the ground with a tremendous crash and crumbles to dust. By the time Hermes gets to their home, Pandora is long gone. The jar remains, and she had closed it too soon. He pulls and tugs, going so far as attempting to break the jar, but it's no use. He's a celestial being, and his hand cannot open it. He must find her. Hermes goes hurtling into the air, determined to track her down, but there's so much suffering, so much death and despair. He must find Pandora, but people are hurting. He strikes his catechaeus into the ground, and both of his familiars come to life. Two massive hissing snakes. Help them, he orders, before continuing his search. He's no god of healing, but it seems as if he's about to become one. Pandora stands at the cliff's edge. Beautiful face twisted in grief. People are suffering, dying. The world has become a horrid, ugly thing. Her husband is dead, all because of her. Stepping off the cliff is the easiest thing she's ever done. Then Hermes comes swooping up under her, catching her in his arms and flying her to safety. Let me go, she howls, tears streaming. Let me go. I want to be with Prometheus. Something feels different. Her love for him seems more like a dream than her reality, but she wants it back nonetheless. Hermes dumps her on the ground, and she's never seen a god angry before. If she was planning to live long enough to have nightmares, she's sure this would make an appearance. If you must, he hisses, then you shall. But not before you open this. He drops the jar at her feet, and she scrambles back from it. No, no, please don't make me do more. I've ruined so much already. You've ruined nothing, he says firmly. Open the jar. I refuse, she says, tilting her chin up and meeting his gaze, even as her body is racked with sobs. I'm not one of them, not human, but I love them. I won't hurt them. Hermes snarls, and he pushes her to the ground and cages her body beneath his own. Trust me. Trust you? She spits and flips him over so it's her pinning him to the ground. It was you who's cursed me most of all. I should kill you. You're not that powerful, he says dryly. Pandora, please. And if you still wish it, I'll deliver you to Hades and Prometheus myself. I promise you, gifted child. Just open the jar. Pandora hesitates, looking at him for signs of deceit and finding none. She reaches for the jar. Elpis is clawing at the lid. This wasn't what was supposed to happen. She can't help anyone from inside here. Without her, humanity is doomed. The jar containing her opens, and she pushes herself out and into the world. The first thing she sees is the famed Pandora, as beautiful as Hermes said she would be, and as miserable as Elpis had feared. Don't cry, she says. And out from under her mother's darkness, she's grown, is more woman than child. She presses her forehead to Pandora's, cups her face in her hands, and says, Do not cry, gifted child, child of gods. I am here. She is shining, here on this cliff, as bright and powerful as she could not be while with the goddess of darkness. She is here, but also everywhere, stretching as far as all those other terrible things from the jar, filling up the world until more of her exists than all those horrible things. Pandora stops crying and says, Oh, you were what I was missing. I didn't know. Neither of us are missing anything, Elpis, the goddess of hope, says. And it would be so easy to shift closer and press her lips to Pandora's lips, this perfect woman sculpted by gods. And she can't blame Prometheus. He should have known better. But who could look at this woman and not want her? Not Elpis. Pandora tries not to feel like a dishonest woman, because she loves her husband, or she did before she opened the jar. But Prometheus, as good as he was, treated her like a possession, a prize. It's why he insisted on a wedding they didn't need. Looking at Elpis, all she feels is possessed, more thoroughly than she ever did under Prometheus's hands. I should go to my husband, she says, because although despair no longer threatens to push her down, she should still go to him, go to Hades and bargain and argue until she gets him back. She does love him. She was made to love him. Aphrodite's magic clings to you no more, Hermes says. I'm sure you could love him. He's a good enough man. But you don't have to. Besides, you know where he is. Hades won't let him go anywhere this time. Elpis smiles, but it doesn't reach her eyes, and says, I am here by the grace of Hermes, Pandora. I would follow in his footsteps, if you would let me. Pandora blinks, uncomprehending, and she continues, I would steal you for my very own, if you would let me. You love humanity, and you can help them by my side, if you want. Pandora closes the remaining distance between them, kissing Elpis with a gentleness she didn't know herself capable of. A gentleness her and Prometheus had never shared. I love my husband, she says, but it sounds wrong, sounds fake, and it shouldn't, because she lived with him and she loved him, didn't she? But Elpis feels like home. Touching her feels like safety, and Prometheus had always felt like danger, in the best ways, in the most thrilling ways, but never felt like a place for her to return to, a place she belonged. Give me a chance, Elpis says, settling her hands on Pandora's hips. You can always leave me to find your husband, but just not now, not yet. Give me some time. Pandora hesitates, but her purpose is fulfilled. She's done what she was created to do. The gods of Olympus have no more use for her, and her life from this point on is her own. She was made to be Prometheus's wife, but that's not what she has to be. Okay, she says, and can think of nothing else to offer her, has nothing else to offer. Luckily, it seems that's all Elpis needs. Because she pulls them together again. Elpis is soft and gorgeous, and this feels completely different from all the times she'd kissed Prometheus. Feels larger and scarier and more beautiful. Elpis's skin on her skin doesn't feel like a brand. It feels like freedom.